Welcome back to Karacast, the podcast from Karasoft, the trusted government IT solutions provider. Subscribe to get the latest technology updates in the public sector. I'm Corey Baumgartner, your host from the Karasoft production team. On behalf of SolarWinds and Karasoft, we would like to welcome you to today's podcast focused around transforming Lomrock Union School District's aging technical infrastructure into a modern network capable of meeting the future needs of students and staff. Scott Pross, Vice President of Technology at Monolithic, a SolarWinds company, and Brett Littrell, Chief Technology Officer of Lomrock Union School District, will discuss real-world solutions utilizing school district case studies.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Scott Pross. I'm the Vice President of Technology for Monolithic. I've been doing SolarWinds for about 16 years now. I started using SolarWinds when I had to build a network operations center from the ground up for a $1 billion company. We had a 99.99% customer-facing SLA. That gave me 4 minutes and 37 seconds of downtime a month for 33,000 devices. So you might imagine you get pretty good with it when you have that kind of pressure on you. I joined Monolithic, which was a professional services firm for implementing SolarWinds about 6 years ago. And we put together a framework that became very, very effective in implementing SolarWinds. In January of this past year, SolarWinds actually decided to purchase us, and we became the professional services arm for SolarWinds. For me, school districts have all, and education in general, have always been a very important part of my life because I actually started my career in a school district, but not as an IT professional, as a psychologist. So I have a very special place in my heart for educational and school facilities and school districts. That said, I want to pass it over to Brett so that we can learn a little bit about his background and get started with a case study.
Thanks, Scott. To kind of give you a little bit of background on myself, I started off in consulting in the private sector. Actually started in Honolulu, Hawaii, where I did some consulting around Honolulu and then moved out to the Silicon Valley, where I did consulting around the Bay Area. And then into Milpitas Unified School District, where I ran the network and IT for there for about 15 years. And, you know, of course, rebuilding networks was a thing. I mean, 15 years doesn't, you know, you don't keep a network for 15 years. I think we rebuilt it like 3 or 4 times and all that good stuff. So lots of experience from that. Then I moved back into the private sector. Actually, probably most notably working at a networking company, a global networking company, and I ran their network and security for the entire company worldwide, and then moved into a security company, again, a global security company as well, and ran their IT and security global as well. And so after that, I moved back into the public sector here at ARUSD and started working with the folks here and kind of moving the network forward. And that's pretty much it. It's, I guess, what we have in here, like 12 years of private and 16. I never actually calculated it out, but it's been a fun ride for me. Not a huge school district. It's about 22 elementary and middle schools, so we're a K-8 district. We have about 500 teachers with probably about another 500 staff on top of that. And so a total of about, let's say, 9,000 total users in the entire school district. We serve to like the east side of San Jose in Silicon Valley. Some of the challenges when I first started here, and this is kind of coming back from all my experience in previous public sector and then in the private sector, was the, just coming into it was, the visibility that we really didn't have. And that was probably one of the biggest challenges that I actually ran into. And this is not a unknown challenge. I mean, there's lots of networks, private sector, public sector, it doesn't matter. You know, there is a lot of lack of visibility into what's actually happening. So when I first got here, it was really interesting because, when something went down, the only way we really knew about it was if someone actually called in, hey, the internet's down, my phone doesn't work, or something to that effect. we send a technician out and they would look at it and say, oh, hey, you know, the IDF is down or the MDF's down or the whole school's down. Who would have known, you know, type thing, you know, where we were at. And so one of the challenges we needed to address was, you know, that visibility. How can we, you know, get more visibility and address this issue of trying to get ahead of problems, becoming more proactive? And another challenge we ran into is budget. I mean, this is common among school districts. Budget is usually tight. And I try to figure things out and simplify it in my work. And when I try and figure out, you know, what's the difference between private sector and public sector budget-wise, and I finally kind of came up with it. You know, when you look at public sector, especially schools, you know, if you were to equate the number of users and the number of computers and the number of switches and devices on the network to a actual, you know, private sector company, you'd be talking about probably a mid-level or, you know, a large-level enterprise company that spends tens of millions of dollars, if not hundreds of millions of dollars on IT, you know. And when you look at a public sector school, maybe you're hitting, you know, about $3 million, you know, dollars, and that counts, you know, the, what is it, the salaries and so on and so forth. So, you know, one of the biggest constraints for us and challenges is how do we find a solution that actually, you know, is within our budget and is able to manage all of these different devices. So, and then, you know, other things, you know, lengthy procurement processes, and that all kind of ties to how much money things cost and how much, you know, you're going to be able to manage and so on and so forth. And the final thing was the underlying challenge for everything was, where did we want to go in, you know, the next 3 years? I built out a strategic plan for the district, but getting there, building it out is one thing, you know, getting there is another thing. And so one of the things that, you know, when we were looking at, you know, what we needed to do was, how are we going to get there from where we're at today? So as far as the decision process for us, it really kind of comes down to looking at the challenges that I just mentioned and, you know, what solution is going to address that. I think this is probably common across all public entities as well as probably private. You know, you don't have a nailed down process for how you're going to, you know, pick a product or pick a solution, because every solution is a response to a challenge that you have. And so those challenges change. So there is no particular process, but you kind of build it as you go. And so for us, it was looking at the strategic plan, looking at the challenges we have today with, you know, reactive responses versus trying to move down a proactive response to a lot of these issues. And so when we're looking at solutions, you know, as far as what was going to work for us, you know, one of the aspects is, okay, you know, we can buy piecemeal solutions, which I am totally fine with, you know, if they're affordable and if, you know, if they're going to do a good job. But we started looking at other solutions. What we're finding is, at least as far as compared to SolarWinds, was that they're about the same, you know, if not, you know, SolarWinds is better. And it's, you know, it's as far as a total package, it is a lot more budget friendly for us to take in. And so we kind of gain a lot of things with it. We get that single pane of glass, which is great, but we also get, you know, a very good product for the things that we wanted to define. So the solution we ended up going with was, you know, Network Configuration Manager, Network Performance Monitor, Topology Mapper, and Log Analyzer. And part of the strategic plan that we're looking at is a rebuild of the entire architecture. You know, we're moving from basically an open network where, you know, you plug into the network and you have access to just about everything, to a segmented, secure, role-based network. And so how do we do that across 100 IDFs? You know, how do we do that across, you know, the multiple head-end switches and the, you know, MDF, and make this standard space so we're like every single switch is the same? Because again, we don't have that ability to have a network engineer at every single site like an enterprise company would. You know, we have a certain limited number of folks. So one of the challenges, you know, for the solution is that, you know, we need to be able to do this in mass, in scale, you know, and be able to push this out. And so the network configuration manager from SolarWinds is extremely helpful for that, because not only are we able to pull in all of our switches and stacks of switches and pull that configuration in and back up the configuration and all that stuff, the really important part, the one that fits our challenges, was to be able to push out a consistent configuration to each and every one of those stacks. So we know that if 802.1x, which is what we're using to segment these networks, you know, is working on one switch, we can reliably push this out to multiple switches and ensure that if that switch is capable of doing it and there's not an issue with that switch, it's actually going to work the way it works on every other single switch. Before this, what was happening was we would go into each and every switch, we would make a configuration change, someone may fat finger something, someone may, miss something here or miss something there. And so we had a lot of inconsistencies across that. It may not have been an inconsistency that was readily apparent right away because maybe we weren't testing for certain something at that time, but it would become apparent later, or maybe it would just be a nuisance, like, you know, it has this username password to log in, and then this other switch has this other username password to log in, and so on. So we wanted to kind of remove all of these differences in the switches and the networking in general, so we have a very consistent means to manage this, which then reduces the amount of work everybody has to do and the number of engineers you have to have and so on and so forth. The other side was the network performance monitor. And this part is kind of getting us to that more proactive side. Again, like I mentioned before, you know, when I first got here, it was like the way we found out about a problem was we get a phone call and something was down, and then we would go investigate it. And it's very reactive. It's always reactive when you're doing that. But if, you know, now when we get performance monitor, once we got that installed, it was like within a couple of weeks to a month, we had a good list of stuff like stacking cables, you know, stacking cables that, are no longer connected or are bad or are coming up with errors, you know, SFPs that are still working, but the light levels are very low. So, you know, we're moving into that more proactive mode where we're actually going out there and, you know, replacing those before they go out. So it makes it much better so that we're not just reacting every time that something, you know, goes offline. We're actually getting out there and fixing it before it becomes a problem when we have some downtime from the user. The other side was a network topology. Go ahead.
Red, I was just going to say, you know, this is something we see with a lot of our customers, and I'm really glad you brought it up, is that consistency with Network Configuration Manager. You know, we call that a homogeneous environment. And just like you want to try to keep all of your configurations the same within that environment, you want to keep your monitoring the same. So all of your switches are monitored the exact same way with a Network Performance Manager. It makes the care and feeding of SolarWinds itself much easier, but getting to that consistency where you have all of your, as many lines of the configuration that can be the theme as possible, it makes your life so much easier. So completely agree with where you're heading there. We see that with all of our customers, whether they're, you know, in education, they're in the military, or they're in the federal government. So great point there.
Yeah, yeah. And it's kind of funny because, you know, in the private sector, you know, a lot of times, and I hate to say this, but, you know, I mean, a lot of times in companies that aren't necessarily IT companies, you know, their solution to everything is just, you know, throw more money at it. You know, okay, you know, we'll work around it by throwing more money at it. And what I've seen, and I've worked at quite a few smaller or mid-sized or even larger companies around Silicon Valley, is that, you know, that they tend to not fix the underlying problem. And the underlying problem is usually an underlying architectural standardization problem, where, you know, each and every switch or each and every router is configured differently, you know. And so you have a really hodgepodge network, and instead of fixing the underlying problem, they end up just getting ways to work around it. And so the underlying problem never goes away. You know, it just, you spend more and more money to be able to work around it. And that was one of the probably most frustrating things in the private industry, was that coming from the public sector at MUSD, where, you know, I was like the only person managing the network for a good amount of the time. I didn't have the option of, you know, having these underlying problems. I didn't have the budget to work around it. I didn't have the time to work around it. So I had to find a way that, you know, would actually work, where we could have good, reliable network access. And the solution was, you know, standardization, making sure everything is consistent. And we used SolarWinds back then too. You know, it was Configuration Manager was a huge part of implementation at MUSD as well, just like we're doing here. So, but anyway, to continue on, like Network Topology Manager, one of the things that is very interesting with this one, and I'll kind of go back to a different company. This is a company I was working for, right? That was a security company. And we were implementing a spine and leaf architecture, you know, both in our labs and in our architecture. And one of the really interesting things with the SolarWinds Topology Manager was, you know, when we built out the switches, we placed the switches. You know, if you go into SolarWinds, you can place it on a map, and you can place the switches here and there, and you can have it however you want. But we placed it in the ways that we visualize, you know, that architecture. And so I remember placing it in there, and one of the very cool things was, you know, you can do that layer two, layer three button that actually connects all the layer two, layer three connections between the devices. And you can tell quite, you know, readily if you have it misconfigured, because it won't look like your actual configuration, you know, the way you, the architecture you planned it to be. And so it's always fun when you build out that and it actually comes out right, you know, and you actually see these connections being made between all the different devices. And if you don't know spine and leaf, it's, you know, there's a lot of, you know, cross connects between the spine and, you know, cross connects between the leaf objects and so on and so forth. So it's always fun to see that. But the other thing that's fun about it or nice about it is if you mess something up and you have it reanalyze it, it'll actually show you exactly where you messed it up. I mean, because it'll show like that link disappeared or it went to this other switch and so on and so forth. So, you know, again, in a school district, it makes a lot of sense because we have a lot of interconnected devices and making sure that we're actually connecting to those things. We're not connecting through another switch along the way and so on and so forth. So, you know, that was very handy. And finally, the log analyzer from our perspective, this was one of those things, if you go out and buy a syslog server, you know, we could have paid for a fairly cheap syslog server about the same as what we paid for SolarWinds, you know, for all of this stuff. And so it was like kind of a no-brainer. It's like, okay, well, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you that SolarWinds is the most fantastic log analyzer in the world. It's not. But, you know, it's a log analyzer that's actually fairly easy to navigate and search for stuff. And we can point all of our stuff to it. You know, and so we have a record off of the device itself. So if someone hacks into the device and deletes the logs, you know, we actually have an off device analyzer that we can actually see that's happening. So it kind of added in additional features that, you know, maybe we wouldn't have even thought of at that time, but we're actually end up using. As far as benefits gained, you know, there's so much that we ended up utilizing in SolarWinds. And one of them I forgot to even touch on previously, but, you know, the fact that we can push out this configuration, we build managed scripts, you know, to push out the configuration to all these different switches and making sure that those are all consistent. So what we end up doing for, say, our 802.1x deployment is we have scripts that are pre-made by us. And it's really easy to make it. It's just basically executing the commands or doing the commands that you would do at the command. And, you know, we just have those set up for the different switches that we want to, you know, for like a certain model of switch. So if it's a 3750, a Cisco 3750, we just push it out, you know, as to all the 3750s. And all of those 3750s are, guess what, on the same firmware, because we're able to do that also with SolarWinds, you know. So instead of kind of going through each IDF and doing the archive download software or whatever Cisco update way you want to do it, we actually just push that out via SolarWinds and had, you know, all of our switches move consistently to the right firmware version or the firmware version we want to use. And we did that across all the models of switches. And so now we're able to actually take those configurations and we're relatively assured that, you know, those configurations are going to work across all of our 3750s, across all of our 4500s, and so on and so forth, because when we built those, we built it on the firmware that was pushed out to all these different devices. So that consistency, again, kind of keeps coming back. And that has saved us a lot of time, you know, moving forward, because now when we're testing, you know, we can test on one switch or we can test on a couple switches and make sure that, you know, things are working right. Like when someone logs in, do they get placed onto the correct network? You know, is that network getting the correct IP address? Instead of, you know, troubleshooting all of that all the time, trying to figure out, you know, where you made a mistake on this IDF versus that IDF, has helped us, you know, save a huge amount of time. One of the other things that we also got along with our existing SolarWinds deployment was the NetFlow, you know, analyzer, a flow data analyzer. I didn't talk about that because actually I don't think it was actually on the slide, but I did want to touch on that because you know, that one is very critical for actually seeing the existing network traffic that's happening on your network. Not just seeing if a switch is down or not just seeing if, you know, there's a hardware failure or an imminent hardware failure, but actually seeing what's happening on the network. And I love this because, you know, I go back to when I worked at that the networking company, because the networking company I worked at made load balancers, and they also made DDoS products that would, you know, deflect DDoS. And we had like 115 rack lab area. The thing was huge. And all these engineers, you know, they had all these packet generators that were pumping packets into the network, into the lab network. And every once in a while, you'd have an engineer make a mistake and start pumping that network traffic into the corporate network. And so, you know, before we had SolarWinds there and the flow analyzer, we would actually, it would take about a couple hours for us to track down who's DOSing us, you know, internally. And even sometimes we would actually have DOS attacks running outside, because in the lab, they would actually use internet routable addresses. And so sometimes that would actually leak out to the internet. So we implemented the NetFlow analyzer in there, and it literally reduced our time to track down and mitigate those DOS attacks from like 2 hours to like 5 minutes. And I'm not, you know, elaborating on any of this. I'm not exaggerating on any of this either. It literally, you know, when we get a call, hey, you know, network looks, you know, seems a little slow, we would go into SolarWinds, look at where the big spike in traffic is from the NetFlow, and we would see exactly what network is coming from. We would, you know, the time it would take would be us launching PuTTY, get into the switch where that VLAN is, and shutting down that VLAN. And that was the end of the DOS attack. Whereas before, we would, you know, see it hitting the firewall, we'd see it hitting our core switch, we'd have to track it back, you know, to the core switch of the lab, and then we'd have to track it back to the edge switch of these devices and all that stuff. It made it so much simpler. In an educational space, we see similar things. Granted, you're probably not going to see kids executing DOS attacks or DDoS attacks too much on the internal network, although I wouldn't put it past them. You know, you do see slowdowns and you see issues where, you know, you just can't explain it today. You know, like if you don't have that visibility, you don't know why, you know, going to this one, you know, going out to the network at this one site is slow. You know, it may be that someone's downloading a video game, you know, and for some reason it's taking up all the bandwidth, but you don't really know because you don't have that visibility. So that was another product we actually got, the NetFlow Analyzer, and that actually helps us, helps a lot with actually figuring out how to optimize your network and where issues are lying. So,
you know, Brett, you're really right here, because this is something we see all the time as well, where, you know, you have students that are bringing their iPads to school, they're logging into they're utilizing the Wi-Fi. Now you're able to get an idea of, you know, what does their traffic patterns look like? Where are they going on the internet? Are they going to places that they shouldn't be going? Is everybody trying to utilize a Spotify or a Netflix? And although a lot of the school districts now have filters in to prevent those kinds of things, you know, you can't tell. I've actually installed NTA on school district networks, and all of a sudden we found out that they were doing, the students were running BitTorrents and downloading illegal movies and that kind of stuff using it. So it's a phenomenal tool that allows you to really get an idea of not only how your particular network is using the traffic, but also how are your students using the traffic that's available.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, to be honest, when I worked at MUSC, we also had it there, and it was the same thing. You know, we would actually utilize that to see what was going on. So so it is definitely relevant in the educational side as well. So as far as advice, I would say, there's always a lot of advice in to give to folks. You know, every place is different though, so it is kind of tough. You know, you got to do what you know is best for your school district, or you got to do what's best for your company, and so it's always changing. However, what I found in a very general sense is try to make things agnostic. You know, don't tie it into a vendor. That's one thing I do like about SolarWinds is, you know, if we have Cisco switches, or we have Juniper switches, or we have Arista switches, or Ruckus, or Aruba, you know, it works across all of those. So it's not like, I remember when we first got SolarWinds, the competitor was Cisco Works, and everybody called it Cisco Quirks, but it, you know, it really only worked for Cisco. And even then, a lot of people that I heard from, I've never actually used it, told me, yeah, it's really kind of wacky. And SolarWinds was pretty straightforward, you know, and it worked across not just Cisco, but all these other switch vendors as well. And when it comes to being agnostic, you know, it actually lends itself to helping in a lot of other areas as well. So to give you, for instance, when I was at MUSD, after a certain amount of time, we really stuck to standards. You know, we didn't care about, you know, the next cool thing that Cisco had or the next cool thing that Juniper had. If it wasn't a standard, we wouldn't implement it. And the reason is that we wanted to be able to take things out of the network and put something else in so that we didn't have to be stuck with an okay product from this one company because we got all these other products that were pretty good from them. You know, we wanted to be able to implement a best of breed product that maybe, you know, hopefully costs as much or cheaper than the other one, and be able to just, you know, place it into the network and have it take over, you know, whatever aspect it may be. And for instance, is we did 802.1x at SD as well. So, you know, we had the Cisco, I believe it was ACS server there. And so we use that for our Radius server. Well, Radius is a standard. 802.1x is a standard. And so when the ACS server stopped working for us, you know, because of, you know, Microsoft changing their clients and all that stuff, we moved to free Radius. And it was no change on anything other than, you know, we had to make sure that free Radius was actually working and it was, you know, pushing out the VLANs that we wanted to for 802.1x. But we were able to interchange those devices. The same was true with the firewalls and the proxy servers that we had. We stuck to standards for each one of those, and we can interchange those devices as needed. So we weren't kind of stuck into the Cisco side of things. And what I've seen in private industry is, you know, once you go down that rabbit hole, it becomes very hard to break out of it if you're, you know, in a proprietary solution. Like, for instance, one company I worked at, they did 802.1x. They got ICE. This is a Cisco company, all Cisco. They love Cisco, which is great because Cisco's a good company. But, you know, they had ICE, they had all this stuff, and they never really implemented network segmentation, you know. And by the time, you know, after 3 years of having ICE do nothing on the network, Cisco came along and, oh, hey, we got this new thing called TrustSec. It's even better than 802.1x, you know. But then you start looking at it and it's like only works on Cisco switches, which is great for them. But if they ever wanted to add anything, it makes it very hard to break out of that. Not that you can't, you could probably finagle TrustSec, you know, by, you know, redoing translation rules and all that good stuff, but it becomes a lot harder. And so just trying to stay away from those proprietary solutions and trying to stick to standards, stay agnostic as possible, is probably the biggest advice I would give anybody, you know, when they're building networks or building new networks or what have you. So, and then I suppose lessons learned, this is kind of a ironic one. So as far as I know, and maybe this is not true, but Cisco came up with the NetFlow idea, the flow data, metadata of network traffic. Yet most of their switches don't support it, or at least a lot of their edge switches and all that stuff don't support it. And I came from the private industry where there's a lot of Juniper, there's Arista, you know, Ruckus and all that stuff. And all those support S-Flow or J-Flow or NetFlow and all that. So when we got the flow portion for SolarWinds here, I'm looking at the switches and they don't support NetFlow, which was, like I said, ironic. I'm not sore about ordering, you know, getting that portion with it. because I know we're going to be changing the switches out to switches that do support NetFlow. So now, like, maybe we just support NetFlow in the core because those are the switches that can handle it. Eventually, this is going to be at the edge as well. And so, you know, lessons learned there is probably a lesson I learned a long time ago and I just forgot again is, you know, make sure, you know, all your stuff actually works with that. As far as anything I would do differently, as far as when it comes to SolarWinds, no. I have to say, from the start, once we implemented SolarWinds, you know, we started seeing, you know, things that we needed to take care of right away. You know, we started moving directly into that proactive mentality where we're fixing stuff before it breaks. So from my perspective, it was a very successful implementation. The biggest problem I would say that you may find is implement something, and this goes along security as well. And I think I'm just going to equate this to security because, you know, it's very similar. If you go out and get a pen test done, you know, and I always tell this to people, what good is that going to do if there's no one there to fix anything? You know, if you go out and it's going to tell you, yeah, you have all these vulnerabilities type thing. But if you don't have someone to go and actually fix those things, then all it is, you know, more chaff, more worry for you to deal with. I'm not saying not to do pen tests. I'm saying you got to make sure when you do this stuff, you actually execute and make sure that you take care of it. And so, you know, with SolarWinds, you know, we were fortunate enough, we had the manpower to be able to go out and execute on and fixing the issues that we were seeing and making sure we were moving down that proactive path. So now that we have more time from missing that reactive side of things, we're able to actually start implementing more and more things to improve the network over time. So,
well, yeah, I'll jump in here because we've had a couple of questions come in regarding the size of your network. How many elements? Do you have any additional pullers? Can you give us just an idea of the size of your actual monitoring environment? Are you actually, do you know how many elements you have? And do you know if you have any additional pullers?
Yeah, so we have about, I'm just guesstimating here, but about 100 stacks of switches. Each of those stacks may have anywhere from, you know, 2 to 9 or 10, switches in them. But, you know, they're managed as a single switch. And then, of course, we have head-end switches, which are, you know, by themselves. And so that's probably another 22, one per site. And then, of course, internal servers and so on. So I would probably say overall, we're probably looking at 200 or 300 devices. We don't have any additional pollers. You know, we're just using the poller that's built into SolarWinds at the moment. Although I could see, you know, actually using that. I mean, that would be kind of nice. But yeah, I don't think there's too much else to that at this point. Now, that will be going up, though, because that will be going up as we move away from stacks in the IDFs and stuff. We're going to be moving to individual switches. You know, that number is going to go up. So it may be that we're going to need an individual and another polar. But at this point, I'm just fine. You know, I mean, I don't think I've seen any issues with delays on the SolarWinds side.
And that's great. You know, one of the things we love is the ability to put up the additional polars. And if you need to, in some of these school districts, you don't necessarily want all the polling to go across the wire all the time, so you can put an additional poller in different locations as well for polling. So we're seeing more and more of that as well. But no, it's good to hear. One of the other questions we just got is, are there any local, state, or federal guidelines that were fulfilled since upgrading your SolarWinds tools that you were required to meet?
Not that I knew of. No one actually mentioned that to me. We didn't actually upgrade our SolarWinds tools. We actually implemented SolarWinds. So we upgrade, of course, as we go along to make sure we're on the latest version. But as far as guidelines, I would say the guidelines that are kind of ancillary to this is, you know, like security guidelines, you know, being able to implement segmented networks and role-based access, you know, falls along like NIST guidelines and all that stuff, which also falls along, you know, being able to, reduce the insurance, cybersecurity insurance and all that stuff that we currently pay in case we get hacked into, because now we can prove that, you know, we segment things and we do all that stuff, which is all not directly SolarWinds, but is enabled through SolarWinds because we're able to actually do this en masse.
Excellent. No, that makes a lot of sense. As far as the way that you're doing things right now, are you seeing that? Do you plan to integrate SolarWinds with other tools, such as a ticketing system or anything? Any plans for that in the future?
To be honest, our ticketing system is kind of more geared on the facility side. So probably not on a ticketing system. We're always looking for ways to integrate different services, you know. So, I do know that we were looking at, website uptime. So uptime for different school sites and so on and so forth, and exporting that and getting that connected to our external website server so we can have a static, semi-static way of updating the status of the network in general. So if someone wants to know if one of our school sites is down, they can go in there and actually see that. That's still in process. We've had just so much other stuff going on, we haven't been able to build that in. So,
I always tell people, especially in these school districts, you start off with simple automation. Sometimes it's just simple. It's just restarting a service when the service goes down. If Sam realizes that the service is going down, using a tool to restart a service, start small and then expand outward. A lot of people are using the ticketing piece. We see that quite a bit, but so many of these tools now can be integrated together to talk with each other, and simply pulling the status of SolarWinds as far as is a website up or down can be very, very helpful for the end users.
Exactly. So I see one question here. Why are we moving from stacks to individual switches? If you don't mind, I was just going to answer that real fast. It's kind of funny because I have a very, very bad history with stacks. I don't think there's ever been a stack that I liked, mostly because, you know, it just adds additional headache when there shouldn't have to be any additional headache. And what I mean by that is if we look at SolarWinds Configuration Manager, okay, you can just as easily push out a config to 10 switches as if you logged into that stack that had 10 switches in it and execute the command that way. The difference being is that on stack switches, you know, if one of the switches goes out, and I've had this happen before, you know, it could take down the whole stack. It's not supposed to, but it could. When you want to replace it, you know, it can become a big issue. If you need to upgrade the firmware, typically the entire stack has to be taken down. So, you know, an entire wing may be taken down versus maybe, you know, if you can do it, you know, system by system. And I know there's ways, you know, you can have it reboot, you know, one after the other and all that good stuff. But it never seems to ever work quite the way you want it to, at least in my experience. And it's unfortunately, it's been every single stack vendor, every single vendor that's, you know, had a stack has some kind of issue. Even like Juniper, I remember we had, when I worked for the networking company, they had this huge Juniper stack. And I researched it and I did everything that I thought I was supposed to do. And I just had to add one switch to it. And that one switch corrupted the entire stack, which shut down all of engineering. And I was just like, what happened? And I'm like, let's plug this one switch in, you know? And so it's kind of about, you know, reducing the scope of potential downtime. You know, if you have that single point of failure, which is that one stack that's going to manage an entire building, and you don't gain the benefit of that configuration side of it, you know, it's not that significant to you because you're able to push it out through, say, SolarWinds Configuration Manager, then it makes a lot of sense to not have that extra point of failure.
Thanks for listening, and thank you to our guests, Scott Pross and Brett Luttrell. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe to Karacast, and be sure to listen to our other discussions. If you'd like more information on how Karasoft or SolarWinds can assist your organization, please visit www.karasoft.com or email us at solarwinds@karasoft.com. Thanks again for listening, and have a great day.